Thank you.
You're welcome.
I would like that, Dr. Wolf.
It'd be in China. Diane, whom I know.
Oh, David probably hasn't seen it.
Where is Christopher being?
Oh, I think Christopher saw it.
Where did you acquire a Tibetan hat?
I don't know where it comes from.
Tarthing. Tarthing brought it, perhaps?
I think so.
Hide it under the tablecloth.
Sneak it at the edge. Right?
Well, you know, you forget about it after a while. Yeah. Initially, I get all, you know, I just stop talking. It's not on yet, is it, right?
Oh.
Everyone who eats at the table is must try it.
Right.
Do they? Yeah, well, I don't know.
Christopher's not one to respond to you must.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We do.
Sorry, because he's cursing.
It might be suggested.
I know it won't fit my head.
Put it on.
He's too big headed.
Is that the front?
Just close your eyes for a minute and feel what it does to your crown chakra.
It must be certain. Because of that.
That's a very, very interesting energy in it.
I think it's probably beneficial for thinking.
Now, if you break out in the Tibetan chant, you'll know it's really efficacious.
Right.
It's beautiful. It's just a gorgeous piece
of headgear.
Seems
like there's an active chamber there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely varies from the feeling.
Wow.
It doesn't get that cold here.
Oh.
I would think Tarthang too.
I don't think so, because he brought other things,
yeah.
And he's the only one.
John may know.
Yeah, right. Well,
if I go into a trance state once I put this on, please catch me.
That's right,
you're notorious.
That's right, Ellen.
That's
telling.
Got some very, very powerful.
So, like Baptist Church. Yeah.
That's what they do in Baptist Church.
They follow.
We'll distract.
You wait to hold on.
Wow.
The bell in there, she won't let you go into a trance.
Namaste.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Right on cue.
The Tibetan bells.
I like it.
No, you can't keep it.
No, what's that?
He's enjoying it.
You could wear it a while.
Beautiful. That did evoke something as soon as I had it in my hands, and that's why I said something about the trance state, because some of those visionary phenomena accompanying the energetic surges had a Tibetan content. And I just momentarily went back into a part of that. That's wonderful. How does it fit on your head? Well?
It looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It fits.
It's so great.
You look like you've had some experience with that one.
This country is too warm for it.
And it's cute. It's really cute. Oh, I just love it. It's wonderful. That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That's just a lovely, lovely piece of work.
It's been put away for some time, right?
Uh-huh.
You found it tucked away?
It just danced out and said it's time to take me out of the box. Yeah, it was in the closet.
Isn't it inside?
You happen to know the significance
of
that?
Yeah,
that's not accidental.
Yeah, I was looking at that last night. door the other night.
That's not accidental at all. I'm wondering.
Well, something else. Oh, the arrowheads. That's mom on those two. Hmm. Oh, I didn't know that she was.
Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Actually, I like the simple woven inside.
I don't know, I like glitter.
We have to show you Dr. Wolf's birthday cake. We still have it.
The cake?
You still Wait, have his birthday cake?
We could light it up again. I don't know if he wants to blow it up. And it's sort of warm tonight.
But
we could show you the top.
What did you use to preserve it?
Yeah.
Some Tibetan formula?
Elmer's glue.
Yep. Elmer's glue?
Yeah. We made it out of Elmer's glue. the top of the cake.
Okay.
We had a fake top so that the cake didn't turn to wax. Actually, it was James' idea.
Blew out 97 candles.
They put 97 candles on your cake?
Yeah.
I didn't put them out.
Did you blow them out?
He blew them out by himself.
In the garden.
Congratulations.
But they put them on a porch top.
I should hope so.
You know, that's a mixture. You only have to add one.
Candles. Next year they only have to add one.
That is it. We permanently glued it on.
Seriously.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
I would like to see that. Yeah.
Last time we put full candles on, I think it was only 93 or 4. And they said by the time they got the first one, the last one's left, the first one's gone.
We had
on
four
or
people
out.
Light it.
Yeah.
Did it real quickly.
Look forward to a Holocaust every time you have a birthday.
Yeah, you need a fire
you see those flames go left.
Yeah.
And they become a major flame.
Gene says that he's always he goes into town to get a fire permit every time Frank has
a
birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, you put a bag on it.
We had everybody fooled. Everybody thought this was a cake.
Oh,
look at this expense. Oh, that's
right.
Neat. What a neat idea.
That's amazing.
Isn't that a great idea?
What
Ellen
is it?
And I had so much fun.
What is it?
It's
Crisco.
A lot of Crisco and sugar, and then Elmer's glue. We put, see that yellow?
Yeah.
Little Elmer's glue to keep the candles in. We were afraid that they might fall.
That's amazing.
That's terrific.
Did you have the fire extinguisher handy?
Mm-hmm. And then you put it on top of a regular cake.
Yeah, and then we carried the cake, and then we took this away and cut the cake.
Well,
it looked like all one cake.
He was probably offended, I'll tell you.
It was all lit up.
Oh. Could you leave room for a few more?
Yeah.
Here and there.
But this is
appropriate color.
Punk.
Really appropriate color of candle.
Yeah.
Obviously, it didn't take him that long to blow them out either, because they're all still false. On his 100th birthday, we'll get those false candles. The ones where you blow them out and they come back on. That's what. That's his life.
Cost you about $50 for 100 of those.
Well, on second thought.
Maybe it's the last one.
No, that's an exaggeration.
That's appropriate because that's kind of what the world tries to do to all of us. And we get around somebody like Dr. Wolf and he just blows on us again and we light up more. Yeah, that's wonderful.
When does that arrive? Speaking of arrivals.
Tomorrow night.
Late.
Lighting up.
Late. Speaking of lighting up.
See how I go like this.
I think she's pretty cool.
Casual.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is kind of
late.
Very late.
Which?
Then I turn red.
which Ed?
Ed the Dale.
Oh!
The red one.
Oh, okay. Yes.
The red Ed.
The red.
Yeah, I remember Ed very well.
The red.
In fact, he sent a letter to me this last year.
Oh, he does.
Have you convinced him?
Every
time he comes.
No, I mean, I hope he makes it. I know he does. I hope he makes it for convention. Last year
he
didn't.
Talk
to Ellen about that. She'll make sure he makes a cheesecake.
Smile pretty.
I can't do those things.
You can.
She doesn't work like that.
She doesn't.
No coercion.
And you're not a New Yorker then.
I'm probably not.
I'll give you
my
I'll give you my recipe, my family recipe.
Cheesecake.
Can I make one?
Yeah. For cheesecake?
Oh, very simple, easy.
He makes a big cheesecake.
Uh-huh.
Which cheeses do you use? Does the family use?
I use the best quality cream cheese I can get my hands on, not the Philadelphia sort of stuff.
Real cream cheese.
Real cream cheese, yeah.
Mascarpone or one of those real cream cheese.
We get it from a source.
That's the Italian version of
cream
cheese.
And some Roquefort or
bologna.
Yeah, you sprinkle bits of prosciutto on the top and add a little Chianti to the batter.
Are you getting your leg pulled? Real cream cheese. Mm-hmm. Real cream. Have you ever tasted real cream cheese?
I didn't know there was anything.
No, you other than Philadelphia. Go on and you take a taste of it and you're among the
Mm-hmm.
Strawberry, the slightest.
That's not a big thrill to me.
Well, it could be if you tried it.
And there's basil growing on the side.
I thought you were
going to
the peels of the Lord.
It's really a tough one, don't you? Yes, see the lilies of the field.
The dairy field, I think it's now.
No, the dairy field was not the thrill. They toil not. Do you use swieback by any chance?
For the crust?
Yes.
I have in the past, but I'm addicted to graham crackers.
You guys are talking
graham
a similar
crackers?
Language.
You consider graham crackers?
Uh-huh.
Over Swieback?
Yes.
Of course, they're nice.
See? See? See?
I know that's not quite up to the standard, but...
David, you just lost your value in her eyes. Uh-huh. You like graham crackers.
I have young children in the house, too. That's one of my excuses.
They eat the Zweiback?
No.
Just
no, they like the graham crackers.
No.
They're probably
they
being tased.
Zweiback?
You did say that the conversation has to be profound.
Well,
this
give
is my ask for the integration of the divine and the fool.
I hate to tell you,
that's
this
right.
is being recorded.
Yeah.
The sacred and the profane, they all come in a single breath.
I don't want to talk about cheesecake anymore.
But I can give it a spiritual twist. I can give her
the PhD students in the future having to wade through this.
Who cares about cheesecake?
Graham crackers versus Zweiback.
And now if John Clinton was here, you'd say, no difference.
Call us,
yeah. It has to do with the form assumed by the materials. Mm-hmm. And you cannot get the same granularity with Zweiback that you get with the graham crackers. And since I pay a lot of attention to sacred geometry in all of its manifestations, even in the lowly graham cracker, it's more important for me to use graham crackers.
Coming up. Well, as far as I see, the fundamental difference between graham cracker and Zweiback is such a...
Which is more ponderable?
I might suggest that the Zweiback is more substantial and more ponderable all at the same time. For this reason, each crystal that breaks up in an infinitude of possibilities, whereas graham cracker, I suspect Betty Crocker has taken care of the graham cracker reputation. Your turn.
Well, I associate the graham cracker because of its aesthetic qualities, and on the relative plane with the sensuous, I associate it with Ananda. And Zweiback is much more abstract and remote to me. I appreciate those forms. I can enter that state of consciousness, but since most of my experience so far has been in the Ananda state, I have to relate that to the manifest forms in order to articulate the content of that state. And if I brought Zweiback into my classroom and attempted to convey the heart of the Vedanta with that, they'd laugh me out of the house. But I bring graham crackers in, and they all start appreciating.
And you can relate to graham crackers.
Yeah, see?
How do you relate to Zweiback?
There is a difference in form.
But how important is the fresh cream cheese? We have a question from the audience. Excuse me? How important is the fresh cream cheese? Let us ask the originator of this recipe. Sir?
I'd like you to give the first reply to that, since we're into this gustatory, sort of dialectic.
So you can't talk dirty, will
you?
and a crummy deal all the way.
What do you put on top?
Basil.
What do you do to this wide box to get rid of that?
I mean, seriously, because
like bland flavors.
I do.
You add cinnamon and sugar.
Oh, I see. That's
and
crucial.
Butter.
Within the graham cracker, there already is cinnamon. One of the advantages to using Zwieback is that you can alter the amount of cinnamon used, thereby making more subtle the taste of the crust. You have much more control. My question is
put on
answer.
Top.
On top of what?
Other than the
cheesecake. Frankly, I use ginger snaps.
You don't put sour cream on the top.
This is getting complex. If you make a cheesecake, you put layers of ingredients rather than just
cheesecake and
sourdough.
Cheesecake with.
Yeah, oh, the icing is sour cream.
Mango.
It's appropriate to have layers. I use sour cream on the top.
What do you think she puts on top?
with a raw egg and a fish on the side.
My cheesecakes are very simple.
But not everyone can get real cream cheese.
So what are you bringing to the potluck?
Well, since I can't fetch the appropriate cheese up here unless Andre can supply it through the local connection, then I'm not sure I'd be willing to
that I know of, no one has ever asked for real cream cheese.
Yeah. You have to have the cheese connection.
Yeah. I'll settle for Philadelphia.
No, Joseph doesn't.
Philadelphia, no, that's so
I'll ask
debased.
Make cheese. Wait.
I know
back.
You can make a shift and appreciate that, but it's pretty bad.
What?
I mean, it's
Philadelphia
cream cheese.
Real cream cheese.
Does Ed realize he fostered this whole discussion?
We'll have to have him listen to the tape.
How does one learn discrimination? And no longer use the word bad.
You use the word inappropriate.
Oh, thank you.
Inappropriate.
But the word bad.
In psychological circles.
The word bad is not bad. It's a particular voice that one has to allow.
But it's only relative.
But it's hard to have Philadelphia cream cheese after you've had real cream cheese.
That may be. Maybe I should never try it.
It's
got to be more expensive, right?
Got to be.
Disguise it in cheese.
Always is. Right. You get it, the real
if
thing.
If it's good, it's expensive.
I tell you, we should consult a master.
A master. What else do you
How
use?
Far are you willing to travel?
I might drive.
No, my recipe is very, very simple.
Is a master in this country?
Just a simple thing of the graham cracker crust and the cream cheese, eggs, sugar, liqueur, depending on what I have in hand, lemon juice.
Liqueur?
Yeah, and sour cream. So,
sounds good.
It's nice, you know, whatever has on hand, a little cream de coco, a little Kahlua, a little...
Have you ever
cherry.
Had
amaretto
cheesecake?
Oh, I love
yeah.
amaretto, yes.
Yeah.
I don't often have amaretto around the house. So.
I don't either. I wish
yeah.
I did. Well, we have lately. We love amaretto. Mm-hmm. We ask for it for birthdays or Christmas. Yeah.
I drove 350 miles today. To come down and talk about cheesecake, and I'm enjoying every bit of it. So anything can happen here, Dr. Wolf.
Poor Franklin waits for days and days and days to have this philosopher come talk to him when he talks cheesecake.
With the tape recorder going.
We had a singer arrive here the other day. They say that usually you have to go and hear the singer. In this case, the singer came here.
Joel, that's not fair.
He's mad about doing
no,
the
dishes. Can't do it again.
This lady brought an amplifier and speakers and set up and sang Dr. Wolf a 45-minute set.
What kind of songs did you sing? What sort of
soft rock?
Soft rock?
Did you record
it? I was the only one here.
Really?
What I hear.
It's not my style.
Popular music, a little bit of classical on the piano.
Huh.
Real classical, or
she'll be back.
Light classical.
I think voice exercises from some Italian opera. Should have pretty classical.
Well, a freely given gift. That's wonderful. Even if the music is not appropriate.
Voice acting tape. Like you could play a Fleetwood Mac tape. She sang a lot of Fleetwood Mac. And it removes the voice, and she sings the microphone with the tape. It was so weird. But the band.
It's still there.
It's still mm-hmm. there, but her voice comes in over this. So I was like this. Amazing.
New technology. Probably in that second door.
It's still functioning. Thank you for sharing your food.
Oh, you
really appreciate it.
Thank you for sharing your wit.
You're welcome too. Is that we should turn that off. We should be recording this.
Yeah, well, we should
erase
the
tape right over
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's why one can remain spontaneous with the tape on. Mm-hmm. It comes and goes with just a.
Plus, very few people would be willing to listen to it. I'm sure.
Actually, you never know.
Although,
bring home with me.
I'll tell you, Andrea.
My mother will say, Ellen, what have you been doing the last few months?
In the classroom, I use mundane things like this and draw.
Take back cheesecakes. You're relating.
You know, draw the pictures out, the images, the lessons, and with a cheese pie, the ingredients, the form, and so on. I can go on for a couple of hours about mm-hmm. the exploration of curvilinear. And rectilinear spaces mm-hmm. or forms just on that. Yeah, and then take it into Pythagorean geometry and relate it to symbolic logic and move it into music and lots of different forms. Just the most obvious little objects are so good in the classroom. I've never taken a cheese pie in the classroom, but now I probably will just to share it.
I think better take two different crusts and have them evaluate the difference.
I don't think in 16 weeks I can get enough of Shankar to appreciate that difference. I think it tries.
So that's the familiar form works to clarify mm-hmm. rather than to obstruct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you bring it through in the right way, and for me, the art of communication and energizing through the communication is all important in the classroom. The subject matter really takes a back seat. It comes through on its own, but it comes through in a very peculiar form. And the students become aware, but they don't become aware of how they become aware. They just become aware. You can do Shankara and cheese pie. And Bach and soy Bach. That was no pun intended.
That was good.
I had a wonderful incident in this special symbolic logic class I was teaching. I had the students explore masculinity and femininity in conjunction with curvilinear and rectilinear forms. And I had a young woman come up in front of the class. This is well into the semester. She was having a particular difficulty appropriating feminine forms. So I blew up a big balloon, a 15-inch balloon, and I had her hold it and explore it with her eyes closed and explore it in all sorts of sensuous forms, including kissing it. And she had a lot of lipstick on that day, so she left this lovely imprint. And we went through the rest of the exercise, and she went back to her seat. No, the last thing was that I had her break it. After becoming so intimate with the balloon, and then I had her break it to shock out of that. And then we picked up the fragments, and one of the fragments had her lip imprint on it, but it was miniature. because the original size was about like this. It was a miniature. So we could stretch that fragment out and enlarge or contract the lip imprint.
What that does to my mind with the story, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And it's the image of containing and the expansion of the contraction.
Yeah. That was a totally spontaneous part of that, which I try to allow to come up. The lesson that was being carried through with the exercise was enough, but to have that come in for the whole class and for her was just marvelous. Hmm. Yeah. Just a simple balloon. So we could really go on about cheese pie for a long time.
And actually the symbol of the balloon, visually and sensually, the fact that it's, you know, at what point do you trust that it's pure enough as a symbol to have that, the essence of it coming through?
At what point do I trust? That's never an issue for me. It is, because of the way it's brought in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
but
where...
But would it, I mean, as an artist, do you have that same sense of certainty in terms of the art?
I don't know what they mean yet. But that's what I've been experimenting with, is using shapes very familiar in everyday life.
Yeah.
But in trying to find out what they mean. I don't know what archetypal images really are.
Well, you'll come into them. Yeah. The balloon is a marvelous device for lots of things. I started using it in music, in the transformational work I was doing in private groups up there. And I picked up the idea from a group of musicians and performers in the Bay Area. They're called Musines. It's a group of deaf-mute people. And they do performances for open audiences, but audiences which contain a lot of deaf-mute people. And they give everyone a big 15-inch balloon, have them blow it up, and then hold the balloon with their hands or against their chest while the performance is going on. I picked that up from them. So I started, since I use a lot of the techniques Brew uses and a lot of the high-intensity sound, I would always begin by having each person take a balloon, lying flat on the floor, and put it on their chest right over the heart chakra with their hands very lightly on it, and let them pick up the resonation there so they could really feel the energy and feel the induction down into the body cavity. And then the other forms came out of that. It's an exciting way to enhance the senses and to really appreciate the energy of sound.
Dr. Wolf, do you remember we were talking about, is it Helen Keller? Who, the woman who was deaf and mute, who was able to pick up, she was...
Oh,
the,
you mean...
Helen Keller, I believe.
Yeah, Helen Keller.
That she learned to understand what sounds meant by touching the vocal.
Yeah, she held her fingers here.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Mm-hmm.
And she got the meaning from that.
I do like that.
David was just talking about a concert performance where the people there who could not hear would hold a balloon to their chest and feel the vibration of the music. A blown up.
All right.
You mean deaf people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was impressive, because she could neither hear nor see.
Mm-hmm.
And they applauded, and she got that, she got it to her feet.
Now these don't need washing, are they?
That was impressive. I'm glad I had that contact.
That's such a dramatic and immediate verification, if you wish, of the existence of self. Without that, she could not have moved into these sensory modes and actually on out into the world. It's a remarkable story.
It is. Of course, the credit goes to her teacher.
Yes. Very.
Very patient. She slowly got opened the door to the world, as it were, for Helen Keller.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful affectional relationship between them. It was evident when they're on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was something well worth it. She was shut away. And the teacher said when she came that little Helen Keller was just about like an animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That'd be a horrible double disability.
It's a true teacher.
Yep.
That's an example I pay attention to all the time and share it with students. It's a constant teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the teacher opened the world for her, and she became known and even famous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lovely to know that as we evolve different manners of communication, that the teacher is one who wants to share the ability deeper and deeper. More and more subtle.
You're not washing the dishes.
It threw me out.
Half time.
Oh. You
gave up.
There were two of them. Dorothy's a big woman. There's a lot I could do.
Dr. Wolf, have you come across the work of a man named his spiritual name is Agayananda Bharati?
No.
His English name is Leonard Fisher. He came on campus last year to speak, and I've been looking at some of his books since then. He's an Austrian who went to India after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Actually learned his Indian culture long before that. He had mastered Sanskrit when he was about 12 with the Indians living in Vienna. And he went on to become a Swami and an Achara, and eventually left India after his work and came to the United States, and he's presently the chairman of the Department of Anthropology at Syracuse.
Hmm.
So he's very well trained in Western science and Western philosophy, and he knows India inside and out. He was accepted in India because of his mastery of the literature and the language. He could speak Sanskrit or Hindi without an accent. Just a remarkable fellow.
Hmm.
And
say so, yes.
And one of the things I find so striking about him is what I find striking in you, especially in the whole field of people interested in consciousness, is that he combines the spiritual with the critical to just a remarkable degree. He's a model for me, another model for me of that particular combination. He brought that critical spirit to India, which was not always welcome, and brings it to his work here in this country. And he has an account of his Austrian years and his years in India in a book called The Ochre Robe. And that's the one that I've recently been working through. It's a marvelous account of the pluralism of Indian spirituality, Indian culture, Indian religion. A very critical account from somebody who can look inside and look from the outside also.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe you might have heard of him. He's the kind of man who would probably end up at your doorstep at some time. I don't know if he knows your work.
No, well, those books have drawn people from pretty great distance.
Mm-hmm.
I never dreamt that books would do things like that. They do.
Mm-hmm.
And the stream seems to continue. One interesting thing in this country, I draw from the Atlantic and Pacific seaboard. Great Lakes area, from Chicago, but not from the breadbasket.
Well,
they can go there and get a good meal.
Mm-hmm.
Thought.
Well, there this is an oversimplification, of course, but the primary form of meditation is with needlework.
That lawn chair is soft.
You have to look at the little old ladies doing needlework in order to see the spirituality. But to move, you know, move philosophically to the point of appreciating the kind of work that you're doing is something else. That's probably asking too much. But that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's most of the cases of multiple personality coming to the attention of the psychiatrists come out of the Midwest. Most of them are women, and something like 80% of all of the cases that occur in this country come out of the Midwest. I'm not entirely sure how to account for that, but it's really a significant proportion. Very serious multiple personality cases.
They don't have to hear
the phone.
We're probably full of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure
I could. I feel like a battery that's wearing out.
It's a certain borderline state of consciousness, I think, that someone might live in coming out of that kind of environment and with the cultural mix, the isolation. That was Joel's Volkswagen.
Like a jet taking off. Yeah.
Appropriate for the 4th of July.
Joel needs a muff.
Quite annoying.
But the fact that the multiple personality cases are manifesting is an indication of an openness to other states of consciousness. It's very chaotic, of course. The people have no control, but there is a predisposition toward other dimensions of one's consciousness, one's psyche in this case. And you know that when that kind of opening can be channeled and directed, and the possibilities are really unlimited. So I suspect there's a great deal of spiritual power there in some way that's simply not being channeled on through into linear structures. Well, you know that when your books start selling in the Midwest, in the Red Basket, or when people start coming from there, that you will have arrived.
Oh, yeah. Well, those books, I'd like to know their future, but I won't be here to see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're getting a pretty good taste of it already.
Well, yes.
And there must be a part of you there must be a part in you which is very gratified by that.
Oh, surely, there is. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised by it. Mm-hmm. You publish a thing that doesn't take 40 years later, there's demand for it. Mm-hmm. But I was told by one of the brothers that it came out at the wrong time.
I think that makes good sense. I was just thinking that all of our individual efforts really are much dependent upon the collective conscious and unconscious, the collective in the more general sense. And that has changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just in the years that I've become aware of it. The time is ripe. The seeds have been planted. The time is ripe. And it's really pretty bearing fruit.
Yeah, no,
Can you get out of there without having the table moved a bit?
Yeah, move it. One of the troubles of living so long is you begin to get problems.
More challenges.
I'll tell you, as you know, the mass of mankind has far more problems than you have, physically and otherwise.